From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Sri Suresh Rao Safkur of Radio Sai. Sri Suresh Rao hails from Mumbai and is a chemical engineer by profession. He got his bachelor's from the University of Mumbai and master's from University of Arkansas, USA. He worked at the Department of Atomic Energy, Mumbai as a Class 1 officer and later joined Bhabha Atomic Research Center and worked there for 19 years till his retirement. He is now settled in Prashanthi Nilayam serving Bhagwan through Radio Sai from the year 2004. He is also a poet and has published many books. The topic for this talk is Cultivating the Heart and was delivered in the Satsang Hall here in Prashanthi Nilayam on the 5th of August 2018. Interspersed and after the talk, we have some beautiful fusion songs from the album Atmanjali. Stay tuned, dear listeners. At 3:30 p.m., we have the live Telugu segment, Sri Satya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari. With that, over to Sri Suresh Rao.
Sai Ram, our topic today is, as Swami says, cultivate the heart. Why is this heart so important in spiritual life? You see that everywhere, all over the world, our education systems, policies are aimed at developing the brain, developing the head. Their logical thinking, the reasoning power, etc., concentration. Nobody really talks about the heart, isn't it? But in spiritual life, I mean the transcendental type of life which the spirituality talks about, it gives a lot of emphasis on the heart. Hridaya, as Swami calls it in Sanskrit. Hridaya. Daya is compassion. And so Hridaya, the heart, is the place full of compassion. Now we see very little of this compassion in the world around us. Maybe in pockets, here and there. But truly speaking, this heart, which is the heart of compassion, has to be cultivated. It just won't come like that, you know. And therefore, Swami talks about cultivating the heart. Whenever a devotee comes to Prashanthi Nilayam, and Swami calls him for an interview, lovingly Swami would say, your home is Prashanthi Nilayam. Then he welcomes them to come and stay here. He says, but my home is your heart. Your home is Prashanthi Nilayam, but my home is your heart. Such a wonderful statement, but we lose sight of it. So more important than Prashanthi Nilayam, he says, is the heart where I reside. And each and everyone's heart, not only your heart or the devotee's heart or the relative's heart or the one who is close to him physically, is in the heart of all. And so that is the importance of the spiritual heart that Swami emphasizes. You know? So this calls for inner exploration and inner vision, because it is all within. It's all within the heart. There is one beautiful example Swami gives. You know, Draupadi was dishonored in the court of Kauravas, and she was disrobed. The garment, sari, was pulled out by Dushasana, the brother of Duryodhana. And so Draupadi, after the war is over, everything is over, she was sitting with Krishna one day. And she said, Krishna, oh, those days when this happened and that happened, and they were talking about so many incidents. And Draupadi was a little upset. She said, Krishna, those days when I was being disrobed, I called out for you. But you didn't come immediately. You came after a while. He said, no, I always come immediately. Krishna says. Then there is an argument. She says, no, you didn't come immediately. And then Krishna says, what did you call out? How did you call out to me? She said, oh, Dwarkavasi, please come and save me. Oh, you said Dwarkavasi, so I had to rush to Dwarka first and then come to you. So that takes time. Then what other name did you call me? He says, oh, Mathura Nath, Mathura Nath, please come and save me. Oh, you said Mathura Nath, I had to rush to Mathura first before coming to you. And so on, she gives so many other names and she says, that is why I was late. And then finally I said, oh, Hridayvasi, please save me. And immediately I was there. Because coming out from here is not difficult. It's very close, isn't it? So he gives the importance of this Hridaya as compared to all other places in the world. He says, your heart is like my headquarters and my branch offices are everywhere. Varanasi or Kashi, that is, or Vrindavan or some other pilgrim spot. They are all branches. My headquarters are right here. But we forget. Because we are turned outwards. We are extrovert. We look outside for help, we look outside for everything, we look outside for God also. And so we lose sight of Him. So in spiritual life, this heart is given utmost importance, cultivation of the heart. I am telling you from the incidents that happened here in Kulwantal, when Swami used to go around. There was a foreign devotee, tall, hefty man. And Swami was passing by giving darshan. He came to this man and he said, suddenly he asked him a question. You know, Swami always surprises you with a question, query. He said, what is your height and weight? Imagine asking somebody in the darshan line, what is your height and weight? Most unexpected question. So this man said, I am 2 meters tall and weigh 15 stones. No, that is another unit, what we are not familiar with. 1 stone is, I think, 14 pounds or something. And a meter, you know, is about 3.3 feet. Swami said, no, tell me your height in feet and inches and your weight in pounds. See, I am 5 feet 3 inches and I weigh exactly 108 pounds. This man was confused. He didn't know any other unit. He fumbled and fumbled and finally Swami said, never mind. Height is not important. Weight is not important. Heart is very important. See, we give so much importance to the physical aspects, the gross aspects of man, the height, the weight, the color, etc., etc. But we forget the heart. So the heart is very important, he says. And he walks away. So we see how Swami in every action, in every word, he tries to teach us a lesson, you know, a spiritual lesson. Swami Vivekananda says, if there is a conflict between your head and your heart, follow the heart. Don't get caught up in reasoning and arguments and mental thinking too much. Follow the heart. Because the heart is the voice of conscience. Whereas head can give you only the voice of reason. And this voice of conscience, if it is not cultivated, can happen to be the voice of the ego. So we have to be very careful why we should purify the heart and cultivate the heart. We can easily replace the conscience with the ego. Again, Swami says, the heart is a single seat sofa. Understand that only one person can sit on it. You can't play musical chairs with it. That means if Swami sits on it, that is, Rama sits on it, Kama has no place there. And if Kama sits on it, Rama has no place there. As you know, Kama means desires. And so Rama and Kama cannot go together. This Hridaya, the Upanishads tell us about the knots of the heart. They call the Hridaya Granti. The heart is completely chained up with knots, tied up in knots by the six enemies of man. We know Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Madha, Matsarya, anger, lust, greed, jealousy, etc., etc., hatred and all. So these are the chains that bind the heart, and because of which you are not able to realize the true nature of your heart. And the true nature of a heart is nothing but the true nature of yourself, ultimately. So the knots of the heart are the six inner enemies of man, which we call, these are to be eschewed, these are to be removed so that the heart is purified. Here we see the basis for all morality, the basis for all goodness, the basis for all nobility, etc. Getting rid of the six inner enemies. The heart and the head, there is always this problem. Whom to follow, when to follow. Head is going by the reasoning and the logic and the power of arguments, and pros and cons, weighing them, etc. But it is the heart that goes beyond reason, beyond logic. It gets inspired, it goes into intuition, which fulfills reason and also transcends reason. But it has to be the pure heart. You may have heard about some of the stories from Swami, how he explains these things in beautiful small parables. Once Narada was in the presence of Lord Narayana in Vaikuntha. You know Narada, isn't it? The celestial songster. The celestial bard, we call him. He moves around on the three worlds. A messenger, sort of. And Lord said to him, Narada, you go over all the three worlds. In fact, all over this universe. Can you tell me which is the greatest place you can find in this universe? Narada is stumped. I mean, it's a big, tall order. And so Narada says, Swami, I think the earth, because it has got so many people who worship you and things like that. Narayana says, but Narada, earth is only one third of the world, two thirds is water. There's more water and there is also marine life in that. How you say the earth is the most greatest place? And then Narada says, yes, yes, Swami, so waters are the greatest in this world, in this universe. And Narayana says, but you know, this waters, sage Agastya, the great rishi from the south, in one gulp he drinks all the entire ocean. See, when the devas and rakshasas are fighting, the rakshasas go and hide in the ocean, bottom of the ocean, and the devas are not able to find them. In the war between the devas and the asuras. So they go to Agastya Muni, the great one, and ask him, where are these asuras hiding? We want to get hold of them and fight them. Agastya, with his divine eye, he says, they are hiding in the ocean. Oh, if they are going into deep in the ocean, how can we fight them? They say. Then Indra approaches Agastya and says, you have to help us fight these enemies. Agastya says, okay, I will dry up the ocean. Then you fight them. And it is said, he just, with one gulp, he drinks up the entire ocean. And the rakshasas are exposed, and then the devas kill them, you know. So he says, how can the waters, Lord Vishnu is saying, how can the waters be the greatest when Agastya with one gulp can finish it off, isn't it? Narada says, oh, then Agastya is the greatest. But Narada, Agastya is only a star in the sky. Just like Dhruva, Nakshatra, Vasishta and Arundhati and all these stars are in the sky. You know, the rishis are, Sapta rishis are all there in the sky. So Agastya is also just a star, small star in the sky. How can you say Agastya is the greatest? Narada says, oh, the space, the sky is the greatest. Then Narayana says, but as Vaman Avatar, with one footstep, I covered the entire space. With one step I covered the earth, and second step I covered the space. And there was no place to keep my third step. Then Narada thinks he has got the right answer. He says, the lotus feet of the Lord are the greatest, because the steps are such huge. Wrong again, says Narayana. Even the lotus feet of the Lord are not the greatest. Why? Because the bhakta, the true devotee, captures the Lord in his heart. And the Lord becomes his slave. And he has to do whatever his devotee tells him to do. I mean, he obeys the commands of his devotee. Then Narada says, oh Lord, my God, that means the heart of the true devotee is the greatest. He says, right, the heart of the true devotee, the spiritual heart of the true devotee is the greatest place in this universe. So we see, this is what Swami told us, Swami tells. We see the importance of the spiritual heart from this story, isn't it? In the Bhagavad Gita also, Lord Krishna explains this. How to cultivate the heart? Of course, there are a lot of things they say, but only we have taken only a few of those things. He talks about the Kshetra and the Kshetrajna. The field, Kshetra means the field, or the where you grow, where you sow seeds and you grow plants and grains, you know. Kshetra is the field, and Kshetrajna is the knower of the field, he says. He compares it to the heart of man and the divinity that is resident in the heart of man. He says this Kshetra or field is full of weeds, what we call the enemies of man, Kama, Krodha, etc. It has to be removed, it has to be plowed, and then you have to sow seeds of good qualities. And then some water, and then some fertilizer, etc., etc. So that it may sprout and grow into a beautiful harvest. Similarly, the heart has to be plowed, purified with good thoughts and good actions. And so the heart is cultivated. It's a beautiful way of saying it. Of course, Kshetra is the body and the heart within. It is compared with many other things in the Bhagavad Gita as well as from Swami's. It gives examples of body being compared to a chariot. You know, that's beautiful from the Upanishads again. How the chariot is the body. The horses are the senses, the reins are the mind, the driver, charioteer is the intellect, and the Atman is the one who is riding at the back, sitting in the master of the chariot. So this is a very beautiful analogy for man and the chariot comparison. How the senses, the body, the reins, the mind, the intellect, everything is interrelated, and the Atman. This body is also called the temple. Now, temple is a structure of concrete, all right, it's made of bricks, etc. But inside the sanctum sanctorum, you have the deity, the presiding deity, that is the divinity. So this body is like that temple. And the deity, presiding deity, the Atman, is resident. Now, we always give a lot of importance to the body, forgetting the divinity within. We groom it, we grace it, we feed it, we exercise it, we do everything for the body, of course. But we neglect the divinity within. That is why man is called materialistic, because he is appreciating only that which is the outer garment or the outer skin. So this is another way of comparing the body with the temple. This body is also called deha. Deha means dahayati iti deha, that which is burnt. You know, Hindus have the habit of cremating, not burial. So they say deha, that which is burnt, because it is the superficial part of the man in that sense. Or sharira. Sharira again means that which declines with time. The body again declines with time. See, it's not permanent. So it is called sharira. It's also called, Baba calls it, Swami calls it, jewel box. The box is hard and strong, made of iron. It may cost some 100 rupees. But the diamond that is inside the jewel box is priceless, isn't it? That is what it is protecting. So the diamond is the diamond of the Atman, which we call. So the jewel box is another beautiful example Swami gives for the body and the Atman relationship. Swami also says body is like a bubble. It may collapse any minute, any time. Body is a bubble, don't follow it, he says. Mind is a mad monkey, don't follow it. Follow the voice of conscience that leads to the Atman. So Swami puts it so differently, so beautifully in such small sentences that we get the importance or relevance of the body with respect to the Atman and divinity. At another place Swami said, this body is like an anthill. Anthills, you know, we have plenty of anthills in Puttaparthi. And it's with 9 openings. Of course, the body has got 9 openings, orifices. In which, this anthill is not just an anthill, in which resides the serpent called ignorance, ajnan. This serpent cannot be killed by pursuit of desires. Jnana or wisdom is the only weapon that can kill it. See how beautifully Swami has put it. This is where the spiritual heart comes in. Wisdom comes from there. Jnana. This serpent cannot be killed by pursuit of desires. Jnana or wisdom is the only weapon that can kill it. So we see the importance of spiritual life and why it is so important to take man away from his sufferings, misery, dualities, birth and death also. If you see the Sarvadharma emblem here, which Swami has put, you know, for Hinduism, they have a statement. Listen to the Pranava Om resounding in your heart as well as the heart of the universe. What does it mean? Does it mean that your heart is different from the heart of the universe? There are two hearts or multiple hearts? There is only one heart. And the heart of this heart is capable of being the heart of the universe. If we can purified to that level. So we see the importance of the heart in spiritual life. There is no limit to it. It takes you to the infinite, to the source. That is divinity, God Himself. And the rishis, we see in the life of the rishis, the ancient rishis in the Upanishads, they talk only about this, realizing this source. See? And they strived for it, succeeded, many of them succeeded in it, and they came out to tell us about the truth of immortality and the fact that all of us are divine. Even in the other major religions you find this, but nowhere it is emphasized as much as in our scriptures. Christ in the Sermon on the Mount, he says, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall be shown mercy. And so on. So some tenser sentences are there. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. But one thing he emphasizes, and which we know is true from our scriptures also, he says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. He doesn't say, blessed are the meek, for they shall see God. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall see God. He says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And that is what we are talking about, purifying the heart, no? The spiritual heart. As I said just now, modern education has been emphasizing the development of the brain and the intelligence. But this worldly intelligence is not going to take you far in the spiritual realm. First of all, the intellect needs to be purified if the heart is to be purified. Worldly desires, worldly thoughts, worldly will come in the way of this purification. It should be turned into viveka. What we call the worldly intelligence has to be elevated or sublimated to the level of viveka. See, viveka is the spiritual intelligence that comes with purification. Vivekananda, we say, no? Bliss of discrimination. Viveka stands for discrimination. That power comes through purification of the heart. Discrimination comes from separating out the eternal from the transient, the eternal from the temporary, the internal from the changing. See? And what do we see in this world of senses? Everything is changing, everything is temporary, everything is transient. Then viveka has to be developed by realizing that the temporary, the transient and the changing has to be transcended, in other words. We see this emphasized in all the Upanishads, in all the commentaries by the rishis. And Swami tells us in a way that we can absorb it. Otherwise we see that this worldly intelligence has led us to so many difficulties and problems in life. White collar crimes, for example, what you see nowadays, are most dangerous and deadlier. They are carried out by the intelligentsia. You know, the hacking of computers and this false information, etc., spreading lies, cheating, taking monies illegally from the banks, etc., etc. All around we see these problems, you know. Who has not heard of this? Mehul Choksi and Nirav Modi and all that. These are all white collar crimes. You sit in your desk on your computer and do them. So unless the mind, the intelligence is purified, it can lead to these kind of problems. and so many other types of problems. They may be wealthy from the worldly point of view, they may be famous also, they may be well known, etc. But you know, that is not enough. Morality, Swami says, the way to immortality lies through morality. If the morals are wrong, if the morals are given up, then there is no hope.
You are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We will now continue with the talk by Sri Suresh Rao Safkur. This talk was delivered in the Satsang Hall here in Prashantinilayam on the 5th of August 2018. Stay tuned.
So we see this buddhi or intelligence has to be purified. And the mind also has to be purified if the heart is to be purified. So this is a subjective science, you know, going within, analyzing yourself, introspection is a subjective science. Spiritual scientists are subjective, whereas materialistic scientists are objective. based on sense observations, etc. Whereas here it is subjective, because the Atman is the eternal subject. See, everything else can be objectified except the Atman, which is the eternal subject. And this spiritual heart is one with that Atman. Just as you say, my cup, that means cup is separate, I am separate. My desk, that means desk is separate, I am separate. It's object, isn't it? We can objectively see that it is separate, I am separate. Similarly, as you go, my house, my car, when you say it is, car is separate, I am separate. Then you say my body, my mind, body is separate, I am separate. Mind is separate, I am separate. My intelligence, again intelligence is separate, I am separate. My ego, again ego is separate, I am separate. Ultimately you will come to a state where you cannot say anything, and that is your true nature, the Atman, which cannot be separated from you. You are that. Thou art that, is the experience of the rishis. The Mahavakya, Tattvamasi, Aham Brahmasmi, comes from that realization of subjectivity, eternal subjectivity. So we see the approach of the scientific nature. Rishis are also great scientists of the spirit. Scientific nature is predominant there also. But we take only as modern science as being true, which is wrong, because it is not, it's only one part of the vidya. It's on paravidya and aparavidya, we say. Knowledge of that which is finite, limited, and paravidya, that which transcends, that is, which is beyond. In fact, when Mandan Mishra and Adi Shankara had a great argument and discussion, some of you will be knowing more about it. It was on this nature of this kind of intelligence, you know, Medha Shakti and Atma Shakti, where worldly intelligence used, you know, for rituals and for pujas and things like that, and the intelligence that comes from discrimination. See, there was this tussle between Mandan Mishra and Adi Shankara. And ultimately Adi Shankara wins. The superiority of Viveka over Medha Shakti. And then Mandan Mishra becomes his disciple. We all know that famous story. At Purva Mimamsa and Uttar Mimamsa, we won't go into that, but I'm just showing you how important is this discrimination and spiritual heart. Another example Swami gives about the difference here is Prahlada and his father Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu was a great scientist. Swami says, our modern scientists have gone up to the moon, but Hiranyakashipu had gone up to the sun. And Hiranyakashipu wanted to change the axis of the earth and the rotation and revolution of the earth. Such great were the scientists. But what happened? You see Prahlada there. He is vanquished ultimately. So there is a difference between this Medha Shakti and Viveka Jnana that comes in, which is superior in the age old discussion on that. Even now, we see in modern management techniques and studies and in business schools as well as in business houses, the great industrialists, they don't give just importance to IQ. We say IQ, intelligence quotient, IQ. They test it for IQ, these people. But that is not enough. Earlier that is to be the main criteria for selection for jobs. And then they found that these people with high IQ alone were not successful. Then came the concept of EQ and SQ. Emotional quotient, spiritual quotient. And then they found that to be a good manager or a good successful manager, you need IQ, EQ, and SQ. Otherwise you will be a failure. In fact, this IQ business has been long seen as with suspicion by many people. You see, for example, William Shakespeare had an IQ, I don't know the figure now, which was much lower than the other poet, Wordsworth, William Wordsworth. And they said, according to IQ, Wordsworth is a greater poet than Shakespeare. But nobody agreed. Shakespeare was an all-time great poet. Then how is it? Was it IQ the only criteria? And then they found this emotional quotient, spiritual quotient, and they analyzed and they found that Shakespeare was head and shoulders above Wordsworth in terms of emotional quotient. Same thing with, if you see Mahatma Gandhi, for example, IQ was average. I mean, some of us may be having a higher IQ than Mahatma Gandhi. But the SQ and EQ was tremendous. It made him a Mahatma. It made him a most renowned and revered leader in the world. So we see some of these modern techniques are also coming around through the value of spirituality in life, true spirituality in life. So the world movers, the world shakers, the molders of destiny, in these people you find lot high emotional quotient and high spiritual quotient. And that's very important in life for the betterment of humanity and for the future of humanity. Swami says only IQ will make you into a clever devil. Like we said, white collar crimes. Mere IQ is not enough to make you a moral person. Swami puts it beautifully. He says art, A-R-T, art is outside. Heart is within. So be artificial, don't be artificial. Art leads to artificial, whereas the heart leads to real thing. You know? Artificial and artificial. He puts it in beautiful ways. Another Western concept which has been very, very much talked about, I mean, I'll only touch it because I also don't know much about it, is the theory of evolution by Darwin. And it created a great furore in the Western world because the Bible didn't agree with it, of course. That man has come from the apes and from the lower species to the higher species and all that. But what our Vedic rishis had discovered and declared thousands of years ago is much more superior to this theory of evolution as told by Darwin. For example, we have said man has to undergo 84 lakhs of lives or changes before he can attain the human body. 84 lakhs of species he has to transmigrate, you know, right from the single cell amoeba to human being. He has to go through 84 lakhs of transitions, evolutions, to attain the man body. That was one thing which has been told earlier, many ages back. And it has also been said how these life forms come from the eggs, from the wombs, from the sweat, and from the earth. They have specified all this. How many come from the earth, how many come from the sweat, how many come from the womb, how many come from the egg. So we see that these things have been known to us long time back. And what the modern science is telling is a mere echo of what has been discovered ages earlier. Now, of course, Darwin doesn't talk about the spiritual aspect of evolution. He talks only about the physical and to some extent the mental. The Hindu believes this is not the end of evolution. Getting the human body, of course, is the greatest thing. It is the highest form. It is the crown of civilization, or what you call creation. But his evolution has not stopped with getting the human body. He has to evolve further, and that is the spiritual evolution. The ordinary man has to become a Buddha man or the Christ man, the perfect man, to evolve that way. He has to evolve to that level. Because only then you can have this perfection, can only lead you to freedom. Freedom from bondage, freedom from misery, freedom from death itself, freedom from birth and death cycle itself, freedom from suffering, freedom from sorrows, freedom from body attachments, freedom from desires. It can come only through spiritual perfection. So man has to evolve a long way off before he can reach that state. So that is our theory of evolution. Another beautiful thing about this, our Vedic statements on evolution, it is reversible. Can you believe it? It is reversible. If a man leads a life akin to a dog, in his next life he can be born as a dog, with the body of a dog. And in our mythologies we have so many such stories, where because of the bad deeds of the person, in next life he is born as a deer or as a dog or a tiger, etc. So that sort of wonderful reversibility, because of the karma, law of karma which we emphasize upon, can lead to so many different varieties and variations. And nobody talks about it except Bharatiyas. That is the versatility and that is the beauty of our culture. There is a beautiful story Swami has told, I think, of Jada Bharat. You must have heard the story of Jada Bharat. I'll just mention it a little to emphasize this karma and this rebirth. There was a king called Bharata, a great king in India, long, long time back, in ages past. He was a great ruler, very kind, very benevolent, very generous, very popular, very successful ruler. One day realizes that he has become old. So immediately he hands over the kingdom to his son, Vanaprastha, and goes into the forest, leaving everything. Imagine what detachment they have to, what a strength of mind they must be having to overnight give up all the luxuries, all the happiness, all the joys of royalty, and overnight go into the forest, leaving everything. Compare it with our ministers of today who cling to power at all costs, even if they are 80, 90 years old, isn't it? So we see how great those people were. So king leaves the palace, goes into the forest. With his own hands he builds a small kutir for his stay, uses grass as his bed, has a cow who gives him milk, and he eats from the roots and the fruits available in the forest. And all the time he spends in meditation. See the aim of life, you know, from brahmacharya to grahastha, from grahastha to vanaprastha, vanaprastha to sannyasa. We see these four stages were being followed in ancient times by many. One day he sits on the bank, he stays close to the banks of a river, because the river is where you can get the water from. And one day he's sitting on the banks and he's meditating. He sees a pregnant deer. He doesn't see, he's closed his eyes. Pregnant deer, on the banks. And suddenly there is a roar of a tiger. And the tiger comes and pounces on that deer. And there is a lot of scuffle and noise, and he opens his eyes. He sees the tiger has caught hold of the deer, and the deer, out of fear and suffering, gives birth to the baby deer. And the mother is carried away by the tiger. He sees this scene in front of his eyes and he is little upset mentally. He gets up, picks up the little one, brings it to his hut, cleans it, washes it, and gives it some milk, starts looking after the small deer, doe, I think. And so that deer grows with him, and he is living with it as a pet, And one fine day he is on his deathbed, grass bed. And these animals have a way of knowing when their master is going to die. So this deer comes and sits by his bed and starts shedding tears. And the king, who all the time was meditating on God, trying to fix his mind on God, at the last moment he sees this deer weeping, and some attachment comes into his mind, and he says, "Oh, what will happen to this little one when I am gone?" And he dies. That is his last thought and the last breath. Now, according to our philosophy, according to our karma laws, etc., the last thought at the time of death determines your next life. So Krishna says, those who chant Om at the time of death shall merge in me. It's very easy to say Om and pass off. But it's not so easy at all, unless you have been practicing it all your life. So in the next life, this king is born as a deer, because his last thought was on the deer. We see how a human being can come in the form of an animal, a lower species, by karmas and by evolution, reversible evolution. And as a deer, he remembers his past life. Because he is a very highly evolved person, he knows that he was a king. And so he doesn't mix with other deers of his kind. He goes to temples, he goes where satsangs are held, he goes where bhajans are happening, and he lives his life like a spiritual aspirant. And then from the deer's life he passes away. And next life he is born as a human being again. He is born in a good spiritual family, orthodox family and all that. But this child is deaf and dumb. The parents are very worried. My God, we have a child who is handicapped. It is not really deaf and dumb. He refuses to get attached to anything because of his past two lives experience. He sees that attachment and bondage is going to lead me into problems, into births and rebirths. And so he acts, he doesn't listen to anybody, doesn't hear anybody, doesn't respond to anybody, doesn't talk to anybody. He's a deaf and dumb boy. And he grows up quite tall and stout. But people think he's handicapped. Doesn't talk. One day he's sitting by the roadside. And the king is going in his palanquin, And there are four bearers who are carrying the king. One bearer happens to have a cut in his foot or a thorn or something, and he starts limping. With the result, the palanquin starts moving up and down, up and down. The king is irritated. He says, "Stop the palanquin." And finds out that this fellow is having a problem. He sees that boy sitting there on the rock, quite hale and hearty, strong. He says, "You boy, come here." And the sentries, others go and bring him to the king. He says, "You lift the palanquin." He doesn't talk or anything, he just lifts it, replacing the other fellow who was hurt, And they walk, walk with the king in the palanquin. But this man is tall and stout, and the others are little short. So again the palanquin goes like this, at an angle. So again the king stops the palanquin, is very angry at this man. He says, "You fool, don't you know how to walk along with the others? Don't you see that you are upsetting my palanquin balancing?" And this man doesn't even talk back. He talks, stands like a dumb fellow. The king is irritated because he is not responding and not replying. In his anger, he pulls out his sword. He says, "Speak, otherwise I will chop off your head." And it is said, At that instant, for the first time in his life, he opens his mouth. A jnani, realized soul. He says, "O king, what do you want to destroy with this sword of yours? Is it this body? Then this body and that body, what is the difference? Both have come from the mud, dust, and both will go back to the dust. Whom you wish to destroy with this sword? My soul? My soul is the infinite one," etc., etc., about Brahman and all that, Atman and all that, imperishable, indestructible, what all, he says. And the king is stunned. He drops the sword and falls at his feet. And he takes him to his court as an advisor for the royalty, royal family. So we see this story of King Jadabharata. He is called Jada because he is deaf and dumb and he is a handicapped person. Bharat becomes Jadabharata. But actually he was a avdut, or what you call a jnani. And so this story seems to show us how birth, rebirth, effects of life, effects of death can happen and how they can change your destiny. But possibility of reversible evolution is what is discussed here. Then there are so many other things which are talked about in evolution. What we believe. Involution and evolution. We believe in involution and evolution. Not just evolution. Like involution we say the seed, evolution is the tree. The seed turns into the tree. So that is what our philosophy talks about. And that I don't think we should go into it now. Sometime we will talk about some of those things. Wonderful truths from our scriptures. Jai Sai Ram.
Purushuni manasai ramuni dila.
Single story of His infinite glory, captured through divine discourses, music, bhajans, and through Vedas, talk shows, interviews, panel discussion, and study circles. All brought to you live from the epicenter of our times, Prashanthi Nilayam, India, Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Treta yuga muna choose.